The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. I am Bob Branco. Good to be with everyone today. This is episode 461, dated Friday, April 24th, 2026. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host for today's show, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how you doing? Peter?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. We're doing fine in Oregon. I think spring has finally arrived. We're supposed to get a string of really nice weather, which for us means about a high of 60 and a low of 45. So we're happy to be in Oregon.
We're in the 50s today. Partly sunny. It's going to be that way pretty much the balance of the next few days. Maybe some showers along the way at some point, but we're slightly below average temperature wise for this time of year. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our programs on your chat board. It is much appreciated. Our media outlets, thank you for airing us when you do. It's much appreciated as well. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia of JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our shows on my website. In order for folks to go find the archives, they must go to www.brancoevents.com and arrow down to where it says In Perspective Podcast. You click on that, and you will find most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to a faithful listener, Anthony Candela. Thank you very much for listening and for your support. I also want to say hi to Diane, who is our facilitator for today's program, along with Mo, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed, let me give out my email address for those people who wish to make comments or write letters to that effect. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Back again for another appearance here on In Perspective. We have former New York Congressman John LeBoutillier. Welcome back, sir. How you doing?
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Peter. Been looking forward to this. Can't believe we just looked it up before we came on the air. What did you say? Was March 20th was the last time I was on, and that was 3 weeks into the war with Iran. We're now 8 weeks in, and it's had a huge effect on many levels of our country in that short period of time.
So let's talk about that. I don't think many of us back then thought that, you know, things were going to get quite as out of hand as it has. But clearly there are all kinds of repercussions rippling throughout, not just the United States, but the world. What are you hearing sort of the latest developments?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think anybody foresaw even then what would happen 5 weeks later. So it's roiled, R-O-I-L-E-D, roiled, upset, churning the world economy to the negative. We have reports out of Asia, especially of shortages of oil and gas. Australia pumps are running dry. Southeast Asia shortages. So the prices are very high. Prices here are high. I mean, we've gone up to an average, national average, something like $4.08 a gallon. I remember when I was on March 20, one of the callers was from California who said that, it's been over $5 here in California for a long time, which I guess I had heard that, but I wasn't really aware of it. And that is higher than the national average, but it's going to get higher for California, the West Coast, and everybody else. This thing is going to have a long-term debilitating economic effect on us, as well as the world, of course. We're all interconnected, and None of this was thought through by Trump when he unilaterally initiated this war. He didn't think this stuff through. And when he announced the war early on, there was never a rationale for why we were doing this thing. And it was every day there was a different rationale. Well, we had to do it because Israel was going to do it. We had to stop their ballistic missiles. They did not mention the nuclear program at the beginning. He lately, after 8 weeks, has settled into that's the reason we're doing it, to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. However, last June, when Trump bombed their nuclear sites, he told us their nuclear program was, quote, unquote, obliterated. And a couple weeks after that, a National Security Agency assessment of the damage in Iran said, well, it was not obliterated. And guess what? The guy that wrote that got fired for disagreeing with Trump, even though he's an analyst looking at aerial photographs and radio intercepts to try to figure out the real damage. Says, you know, the thing is not obliterated. He gets fired for writing that. Now here we are 8 months later, 9 months later. We're doing a war, and Trump says, oh, if we didn't do this war, they'd have a nuclear bomb within 2 weeks. I think we've all come to see this administration lies every time they open their mouth about everything.
He fired somebody for nothing.
He fired someone for telling the truth.
Right. I mean, if the gentleman said that it was not obliterated, and Trump fired him for saying that, then how come Trump later on said, well, let's have a war anyway, because the guy was right.
Right. Welcome to Donald Trump. I mean, this is the history of Donald Trump, what he said. What Trump says one day is irrelevant an hour later. And he's all over the map. And I think we've seen that now. That's really what this war has highlighted are the weaknesses of Donald Trump. That he's all over the map, changes his mind, changes his rationale, lies all over the place, makes up stuff, and he's clearly deteriorating physically. I mean, yesterday, the White House press corps is in the Oval Office for some announcement about a drug program, and Trump is sitting at the desk falling asleep on national TV. And, you know, I don't blame anybody for being tired. I get it. But I know enough about Donald Trump that for years, this was the most vain man ever. Impeccably coiffed, had his hair done, good suits and ties, very big on what you look like on TV, right? Always talking about, oh, yeah, I hired him because he's right out of Central Casting. So Trump is like a TV producer. He then mocks Joe Biden for being Sleepy Joe. Okay, fine. But now he's back in the Oval Office as president, and he's letting himself get filmed falling asleep at the Resolute desk and other meetings, cabinet meetings. He's fallen asleep, knowing that the TV cameras are showing it. That tells me how off Trump has become. He would never, the old Donald Trump, would never have let himself be filmed falling asleep. And he, you know, it's a bad image. It's a bad look. And it goes together with this overall picture of a deteriorating presidency. And we haven't even gotten in to the fighting in MAGA, the turning on Trump by Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Marjorie Taylor Greene, his most stalwart supporters a year and a half ago, now are telling us they regret supporting him. He's horrible, a liar, they hate him, blah, blah, blah. It's an amazing turnaround.
Congressman, I'm you and I both spent a lot of our time in New York. You're still there. I left in the late 90s. And I remember Donald Trump in New York City. I remember him being exactly as you describe him, you know, being vain, being pompous, being nasty, being all those things that we talked to him about. And what I cannot understand, and maybe you can help me with this, is how did he become the darling of the conservatives? How did he become the darling of the conservative Christian movement, conservative Christian movement? I don't get it. I absolutely do not understand how this could have happened. I mean, anybody who was around, you know, who was around New York knew what kind of guy he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. A complete mystery to me.
Well, he's a guy that, brags about all the different women he chased and all, and bragged that, the dating scene in New York was his Vietnam and that he's survived it and all this and that. I mean, this is a totally amoral man. Now you're asking a question I can't answer. How does the Christian right, and I should say it's the white Christian
correct.
Right.
Correct.
Right. These, evangelical Christians who claim their fealty to the gospel. I think they don't read the gospel. I don't think any, God-fearing Christian could ever say the things in support of Trump that a lot of those people have said. I think they've gotten off track on their own religion. And that's
What I find particularly interesting is back in 2016 and in 2024, there were conservative Christians running against him, in the Republican primary, and Trump won hands down.
Yeah.
I understand why the conservative Christians would vote for Trump against a Democratic person. I understand that. I don't like it very much, but I understand it. What I cannot understand is how they could vote for somebody in the primaries who are much more connected with the conservative Christian movement. They had, the leaders and a lot of the Christians seem to have voted for him against people who were in their movement. I just find the whole thing baffling.
Yeah. Well, it is. And in the end, Rick Wilson, a Republican consultant who started the Lincoln Project, back around 2015, 2016, with the rise of Trump politically, Rick wrote a book, and the title of the book is the whole thing. He said, "Everything Trump touches dies." And that's pretty much true of most of his business ventures. And I think it's going to end up being true, sadly, of the Republican Party. That's dying. And the right white Christian movement. And I keep emphasizing white because there are black evangelical born again Christians. They don't like Trump.
Right.
They are sticking to the gospel. Thank God. This other crew is really off track, and I don't know what the deal is with them. You watch them on TV and the things they say and endorsing the nastiness of Donald Trump. Where was Jesus nasty? And Trump saying, I'm an Old Testament guy. I believe in an eye for an eye. The whole point of Jesus was to renounce the Old Testament, to be sent by God to teach us to live a better way than the Old Testament. Yet Trump says, oh, I'm an Old Testament guy. I mean, how does that work? I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I just find it a complete mystery. So I want to pivot back to Iran. So the main issue these days seems to be the Strait of Hormuz and what is or isn't happening. What is your best understanding of what's going on there these days?
First of all, I believe the Iranians have inflicted a lot more damage on our allies and on our 13 bases in the region than the media is aware of. They're not allowed to go to these bases, but I have read that most of our 13 bases that are in the UAE and Qatar and Kuwait and all, they were hit by so many drones and small missiles from Iran that our soldiers can't live on the bases. They've had to be moved to local hotels. So that doesn't get much coverage. Secondly, Iran was prepared for this and had stashed a lot of their missiles and drones underground and have a big back supply to keep using. And they've adjusted themselves to smaller attacks, more targeted, in Saudi Arabia, in UAE, in Qatar. They've been hitting their oil fields, their pipelines, to screw up their rivals when it comes to oil production. So that's a backdrop of that. Then comes the Strait of Hormuz, which has always been open, even in the 47 years since that bad regime took power in 1979. The Strait of Hormuz has never been held hostage until now. And now they're holding it hostage, and we're doing a blockade of the Iran part of that area. And that has shut down all naval traffic, all shipping, all everything. That is going to cause long-term, you know, year or longer problem in oil, in fertilizer, in helium, all that stuff that comes through there is now backed up. And that's going to cause higher prices for everybody on everything. And they know it. The Iranians are very, my mother's favorite word, coony. They're very crafty. And you remember, unfortunately, Peter, I think you and I are old enough to remember the hostage crisis of 79, 80, 81.
I remember it too.
Bob, absolutely. Okay. So they seized our embassy November 4th, 79. I remember like it was 2 minutes ago. And they took these hostages and held them and held it over Carter's head, ruined him, ruined his presidency, and in effect elected Reagan.
And released them on inauguration day for Reagan.
Exactly. The minute Reagan was getting inaugurated, and yours truly was there as a brand new congressman up behind Reagan on the, behind Reagan's left shoulder high up, and Sam Donaldson covering everything for ABC. When the ceremony's over, we come down the aisle to where we leave the outdoor viewing stand. Hey, says Sam Donaldson, have you guys heard the news? And this is pre-cell phone. You know, you're there. You don't have any device that gives you the news. He said the hostages were just let go. And it was right when Reagan took the oath of office. So anyway, here we are 46 years later, and they're not holding humans hostage. They're holding the Strait of Hormuz hostage. And they're holding the world economy hostage. And that is rotting out Donald Trump, rotting out America's allies and our relationship with them. Trump has been EO'd against Great Britain, EO'd against Spain, threatening that we dissolve NATO because they won't help him on the war, a war that he chose to do. He never even told our allies he was going to do it. 3-4 weeks in, when it's not going well, he then goes to our allies for help, and they all said to him, we're not going to help you do this thing. You didn't even consult with us. Why would we help you when you're screwing up our economies? So the thing is just such a mess, you know, and how to unravel this mess. I think there's a way to unravel. And ironically, the way to unravel is Trump's going to have to reimpose the Obama nuclear agreement of whatever year it was, 2015. And what he's going to do, I think, in the end, this is the way, is we will unfreeze $20 billion of frozen Iranian assets. So this isn't American money. This is Iranian money that we have frozen in banks. We unfreeze it, give them their $20 billion. In return, they agree to some sort of 10, 15-year nuclear freeze thing with inspections, and then everybody agrees to open up the Strait of Hormuz. That, I think, is where we're going to go, which will be a rerun of what Obama did. Obama lifted sanctions, gave them their frozen money back, and they agreed to inspections on their nuclear program. And so we will have done all this for nothing. We would have done all of this because Trump tore up Obama's agreement. Now he realizes that's the best agreement we're going to get.
And after all the chaos that's caused the world, you know, because even if such an agreement is signed, and I agree with you, I've heard similar things. It's going to take how many years to get things back on track?
Lots for a lot.
The economy? Yeah, I mean. Yeah. You know, the oil and all that stuff. You know, it is ironic and it is infuriating. And, you know, maybe we'll be wrong and something else will happen. But I think what you're proposing is sort of what I've heard as well. I wonder how his supporters are going to react to that. You know, if that's what happens. You did what? You reinstituted Obama's thing after you said it was a terrible deal? I mean, This can't be good.
Well, you know what? I think Trump is a clever salesman. So I think when he does this, he'll, with his minions on Fox echoing him, he'll say, oh, no, no, it's not the Obama deal. This is a much better deal than Obama got. And anybody who looks at it will realize it's not going to be better. It's probably going to be worse. But Trump is very good at spinning, and he'll spin it that it's different than Obama, better than Obama. And, you know, what's left of MAGA will probably buy that, but no one else will. I mean, yeah. Let's look at this week and last week, the polling that has come out. AP, Associated Press, approval rating of the president of the United States. He's down to 33% approval. The American Research Group, 32%. But we'll use the 33. 33% approval rating of a president is the only two that have ever been lower were George W. Bush, when he was leading office, was at 32%. And Richard Nixon, that fateful day in August 74, when he got on the helicopter and resigned, was at 26%. Trump's at 33, and no prospects of any improvement of the economy or anything. I will tell you, the next time I have the privilege of being on this wonderful show, he could be in the 20s. That's the direction he's going rapidly.
And there are 2.5 more years to go in his administration.
Yeah. I'm not even thinking. I'm just thinking there's six months. Yeah.
I have a theory. It's based on absolutely nothing at all. But my theory is after the congressional elections in 2026, they're going to find a way to, they meaning the Republican leadership are going to find a way to say to Trump, goodbye. It's been nice knowing you. Go away. Now, I have no evidence of that happening at all, but I can't see how they can survive any of us. I mean, they, with their platform and stuff intact, can survive another 2 years of President Trump. I don't see it. And yeah. He's not doing well. You're right. As far as his mental capacities and everything else, I have a theory, and it's based on no evidence at all, but I will see.
Well, I've heard this speculation too. And I think if you look at the arc of his deterioration, he's coming up on 80 and he doesn't take good care of himself. It's not like he's a workout nut, you know.
Right.
Because I know people in their 80s who are in absolutely fantastic shape. And
so do I.
Right. And because they work out, and I'm a big believer in it as I get older, that if you exercise and eat well, your brain does not deteriorate as quickly as those who drink a lot of booze and don't take care of themselves. That stuff does hurt you. And it's cumulative. You know, it adds up over the years. Or as a guy told me a long time ago, he said, how you live the first half of your life, like, you know, 0 to 40, say, how you live that will determine the quality of the second half of your life.
Good point.
Yeah. And I think that's true. And I think doctors will mostly agree with that. Although the human body is an amazing thing. Let's say you started smoking when you're 16, which when I was a kid, everybody, not me, but everybody I knew, man, they were smoking cigarettes and, you know, it's terrible for you. Okay. But the human body is amazing. You could smoke for 30 years and do horrible damage to your body. If you stop smoking, your body can over time reverse a lot of that damage. That's how wonderful this human body can be if you take care of it. Trump makes no effort to take care of it. He doesn't believe, he tells you this publicly, doesn't believe in exercise, eats a terribly unhealthy diet. He now has this thing going on where he's up all night tweeting, posting. Last night, he was doing stuff at 3:40 a.m., and we know that because it's time-dated when he sends stuff out. And then that's why he's sleeping during the day on camera when he ought to be being president. I think the arc of his deterioration mirrors the arc of his political deterioration. And Peter, your theory makes a lot of sense after the midterms. I could also see that I don't know that he's going to make it to the midterms physically.
Yeah. Congressman, you mentioned cigarette smoke. I want to talk about what President Trump, I think, did over the past couple of weeks with regards to sort of making it easier for research to take place about the medicinal value of marijuana and of hallucinogens. And I find this absolutely fascinating on a couple of levels. The first level being, you know, when you and I were, were in our 20s and teens, we thought that these drugs were terrible. We were advertised and told, never use them. They're terrible. They'll fry your brain. And now it appears, that that's not necessarily true. And they're going to do some research to see. And I found this especially interesting with hallucinogens, and because, you know, the LSDs of the world really seem to have an impact on curing some mental illness PTSD things. What is your, do you have any thoughts on that? I just find this whole thing fascinating.
Well, yeah, I do. Now, first of all, what happened was Trump went 2 weeks ago to a UFC fight in Miami. And Trump's a huge UFC fan, and he's got a UFC fight, big card scheduled for this summer for part of the
July.
Yeah, the 200th anniversary at the White House. They're going to build a stadium on the lawn. I kind of think this is kind of cool, actually. I do not have a problem with it. I even wish, because I'm a baseball fan, I wish they'd play a baseball game on the lawn of the White House. I think to celebrate this country, it's great. Okay. But Trump's a big fan, goes to the thing in Miami might have been the night before Easter, I think. And he goes down there, and Joe Rogan, the podcaster, is in attendance and sees Trump. And he had been telling Trump in advance, I think, you got to legalize these hallucinogens for veterans who have PTSD and mental problems, because apparently there's evidence that shows that it helps it. And Trump is trying to woo Joe Rogan back. Rogan has broken with Trump over Iran and immigration and what happened in Minneapolis, shooting Americans, and all this stuff. And so Trump makes it happen fast. And last Friday had Joe Rogan, Bobby Kennedy, Dr. Oz, a few others, into the Oval Office to sign that executive order. I don't know what it was, to order the FDA to study it more or legalize it. I don't know what it was, but you know, to me, that was done to woo Joe Rogan. Whether it's the right thing medically, I'm not competent to say, but I do think if it'll help veterans who are having problems, then we need to at least try it out.
I mean, I'm not remotely an expert in this, but what I have heard that there is some research that says it really does help certain mental illnesses. And if that really is true, then we should do more of it.
Yeah.
And I do know with marijuana, pot, there are many people who are in a lot of pain. It's the only thing that keeps them moving. You know, otherwise they're sedated on legal stuff that our pharmaceuticals put out.
Yeah, and opioids.
The opioids, right. And for a couple of folks who I know that pot makes them functional.
Right.
You know,
well, I mean, in most of America, I think marijuana has been legalized. So, you know, really?
But not the government, not the federal government. It's still
correct.
I think up till recently.
Yeah, it's all about the states.
The states, yes. The federal government, no. And I think what President Trump did, as I understand it, is make these regulations or executive order more aligned with what the states are doing. And if that's true, good, I guess, is my take on it.
Yeah, I'm going to say, just so, because this recording will live in history, I'm not on the bandwagon of what I grew up with was this argument when I went away to boarding school in 1967. So none of this stuff was legal then.
Right.
And I saw my friends taking LSD, smoking dope, jumping out of windows on bad trips of LSD. This stuff was not good for you. I saw friends who were smoking dope. And that was illegal. And I don't know what was in that stuff, but they were smoking it. They changed their personality. They became lazy. They became unmotivated. They were not. And what they always said was, wait a second, if my father can go out at lunch and have a martini, why can't I smoke a joint? And, you know, I don't know, an argument against that argument. I mean, I don't like drinking either. I think this country is so addicted to booze and drugs and opioids and legal drugs as well as illegal and gambling. I mean, this country is just addicted, and it's too bad.
Yeah, and we probably, since you mentioned gambling, let's talk about that a little bit. Well, there are two things to talk about from my perspective. One is the sports gambling, which seems to be going
through the roof.
Yeah. And causing
all kinds
of trouble.
They even have networks. They even have sports networks in the name of betting.
And then with these predictive things, there's a word I'm not getting, you know, where they're predicting who's going to win the presidential election or who's going to,
predictive markets.
Yeah. I mean, this is the Wild West as far as I could figure out. What, do you have any thoughts about any of this?
Well, I mean, first of all, I believe this, right? As a general rule, anything in excess is going to hurt you.
Right.
Anything in moderation probably won't hurt you. So if you like a martini, if you have a couple of martinis in the evening or something, that's probably going to be okay. But not if you get in the car afterwards and drive, not if you have four martinis. I mean, it's the level of moderation. Same thing with gambling. We've all gambled. I can remember in college, some guy goes around our dorm and he's got those football cards and you pay, I don't know, $2 for the card and you predict six games or whatever. It's kind of cool. I did it a couple times and then obviously I lost. Yeah. But I've had, my siblings are all addicts. I had a brother who's a total gambleaholic. I've had drug addict brothers, drunken family members, alcoholic. Addiction ruins families.
Yeah.
All of these ones we've talked about. Alcohol addiction. By the way, alcohol is the single biggest destroyer of humans and families in the history of the world. Not gunpowder, not nuclear power. Alcohol has hurt more people, including many of us who don't drink. But it ruins a family member and therefore ruins the family. That's all by doing it in excess. And now drugs does that, and we're legalizing these drugs. I'm not that happy about it.
This is one of those conversations, you know, what is the role of the government, right, in these things? The government tried to make alcohol legal back in whatever it was, and that failed spectacularly. There was the war on drugs, which we all know and love, that President Nixon, I think, started. And that wasn't wildly successful either. And I don't know what a good role for government should be in this. I mean, clearly I don't like excess of this stuff either. I just don't know how we as a government can best support better behavior.
Did you see in the news in the last few days, Great Britain, which of all the countries is the closest to us politically, you know, they think like us and they just passed a law that anybody who's currently today, either 17 or 18, I forget they're born since 2007. They are forever banned from buying cigarettes or vaping equipment.
They were starting that in Massachusetts or thinking about it. I remember
Okay. But that is not once the king agrees to it, it's been passed by the parliament,
right.
The law of the land in Great Britain. And that's a startling thing look, I hate smoking, but I don't really know why a kid who's today 17 can't legally smoke, but his father can.
Yeah.
How's that fair?
You know. So what is this? Their effort to just phase the habit out?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, of course. And it's unhealthy. I mean, you asked what the role of government is. I mean, you could argue the role of government is to protect the people.
Right.
Not just from outside influences. from the Russians or the Chinese or whatever, but it's from things like that are unhealthy. We regulate the environment for the health, you know, the air, the water, all that stuff, or we used to till Trump got in. And we will go back to that after Trump. People don't want a polluted water system and a polluted air. They're not in favor of that.
But I guess my question, we all know, back in the '80s, you know, the war on drugs and everybody, you know, lots of folks were arrested and were in jail for a long time. And the theory was if you put people in jail for using and selling, you know, this problem would go away. Well, it clearly got worse.
Yeah. So
I don't know how you solve it. But I agree with you in principle. I just don't know what the, how to handle it. One quick thing before we go to, questions, Bob, forgive me for this. I am really saddened about this whole gerrymandering thing. You know, started with, I think it was Texas that gerrymandered so that, Republicans could get more congressional seats. And then it went to, I can't remember all the states involved on both sides of the issue. Most recently, Virginia passed this law so Democrats could get more seats. I just find this whole thing, I think, at the very least unfortunate, perhaps, you know, worse than that. I don't know how we get off this bandwagon. Because it really, you know, it's just going to divide us more.
Right. So the issue is it's Trump who initiated something that we had never done before called mid-decade redistricting. As the Constitution calls for a census every 10 years, followed by a redistricting by each state.
That's based on the census results.
Based on those census results, right. So you do it on the decade. So you 2020, take a year, you would do a census, and then they take those numbers in 2021 when they have them tallied up and do new districts for the House of Representatives and state legislatures. And the state legislature passes them in each state. So each state does it its own way. That's always been how we did it until Trump comes along and he wants to win more seats in the House, like Peter just said. So he's the one who told the Texas governor, give me five more seats. I deserve five more seats. And Governor Abbott just had the legislature redraw the lines and give him five more Republican seats. California said, and the Democrats said, we're not going to sit here and take it. We're going to fight fire with fire. And ever since then, California agreed to a new plan. And Missouri did, and Indiana didn't, and blah, 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 blah. And like Peter said, Virginia this past week. And there's one state left that may or may not do it. Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Ironically, the way the economy is going and the war and Trump and gas prices, what Trump caused to happen is in these Republican states that redistricted like Texas, they spread out the Republican voters over more districts. Figuring, well, we've got margins there. We can take Republican voter A from here and move them over here in this district and we'll win more seats. Ironically, there are fewer Republicans in these districts. And it may be that in a wave election, like this could be a big blue wave this year for the Democrats, they might end up losing a lot of those seats.
But how can you establish a district in the Republican or Democrat's name before voters even decide if they even want a Republican or a Democrat in
that
district?
Well, no, but the way you do it is
artificial intelligence, Bob.
Well, not even that. You look at how they voted in the past and you know this is a red for Republican. This area is overwhelmingly red, right? They're going to vote red every time. So we can afford to take a district next door, cut the line differently to include half of this red area, and this other district gets the other half, and suddenly you have another district that's, you think on paper is red and will vote red in November. But here's what we're learning. A lot of these red Republican voters, especially Hispanic Republicans, have turned on Trump. They watched Trump on Easter trashing the Pope, using an F-bomb on Easter Sunday in a tweet. The president of the United States, I'm telling you, Hispanic Catholics were a big part of Trump winning in 2024. Big part. They're bailing out on him. So he could end up, ironically, losing more of these seats that he went and caused through this mid-decade redistricting. This thing could turn out to be bad for them. That's all I'm saying.
No, it may be right. And Congressman, you neglected, I think, to say the most, I thought, most disturbing part of the whole Pope thing. An image of him being Jesus, essentially.
Oh, my God.
I just found.
That's very controversial.
It's so awful.
Appalling.
To me, that's part of his mental illness. No normal person ever would post something like that. This shows something really wrong with this guy. And if Biden did it, if Obama did it, I mean, they would savage him. Trump does it. Now, what has happened since that is when you could trace it. These MAGA influencers started breaking from Trump. You know, Tucker Carlson coming out saying, I apologize for supporting Trump. I wish I'd never supported him. Megyn Kelly saying he's a terrible man. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she led the charge on this thing on Epstein, bailing out on Trump. And I think that thing of him as Jesus really, really hurt him. And then along comes Vance, a somewhat recent convert to Catholicism, who has the temerity to criticize the Pope and say the Pope needs to be careful when he talks about theology. Mm-hmm. This is from a guy that wasn't even a Catholic. He's become a Catholic, and he's criticizing the Pope, whose job is to talk about theology. I mean, this administration is so out of whack, it's beyond belief.
I mean, I think you could have a disagreement among theology about the validity, whatever the right word is, the morality of this war in Iran. I mean, you can make a case, I suppose. I don't want to make it, that this, you know, that this is a just war. You can make that argument, I think. The problem is, you can't make it, by trashing the Pope and making you know, pretending you're Jesus. That's not going to work.
We have about 15 minutes left.
I want to give our participants
an opportunity to ask former Congressman John LeBoutillier some questions here on In Perspective. So let me ask Diane if anybody has their hand raised.
And Mo is your host. Diane is the streamer, but we have Penny first.
Penny, yes.
Okay.
Welcome in Perspective.
Can y'all hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. I want to respond to the comment about evangelicals. I am one, but I do not support Trump. And my theory is that the leadership in the evangelical movement, some of whom I've lost a lot of respect for because of their support of him, they're so wanting someone who says they're pro-life and that they agree with the issues that are important to white evangelicals that they will believe anything that person says. And I think Trump is masterful at telling them what they want to hear. And when they're around him, he knows how to put on the charm. And also, the Christian network, I know CBN, is very much in with Fox. I mean, you listen to Fox and then you hear some of the same stuff on CBN. They'll say things like, you know, there's turmoil in Iran, you know, that the regime is in turmoil. But yet when I hear ABC News, it says that's not true. I mean, and CNN, that they very much know what they're doing. And so I think that's part of the problem. And until these evangelicals realize that Trump is really a wolf in sheep's clothing and that he lies all the time and you can't trust anything he says about anything because he's such a liar, I think that they will still support him. And when they start questioning him, he is going to turn on them. And I believe that Christians who no longer support him, that wants to, they will be persecuted like anyone else that has deserted him. And that's my explanation. It breaks my heart.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's going on here.
Yeah. I think you couldn't have said it better. Right, Peter and Bob? I think she is 100% right on.
I think you're right. And Penny, just to say a little more about this, I am perfectly well aware that many evangelicals are horrified by what's going on with Trump. And I also know that there's a good 30% who are progressive evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small minority, but they do exist. My complaint is more along the more conservative wing, who sometimes called nationalist Christians. I don't know where the line is precisely, but as I said before, I just find it absolutely puzzling that so many people voted for Trump in the Republican primary. That's what really, really, bamboozles me. I understand what you're saying, Penny. I think it's fair.
It's absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
And I agree with you.
Yeah.
You know,
and I appreciate your thoughts. I think they're spot on.
You know, to echo that, back in 2019 or 20, somewhere when Trump was president during his first term, I never watched CNN, but I put it on one day because they said they're going to do a report from Dallas with a bunch of born again Christian women who support Trump. So I watched this thing and the reporter goes down, interviews like four really nice looking middle-aged women, and they all said the same thing. Oh, I'm for Trump because he's the most Christian man. He's a Christian man. He turned to Christ, and therefore all that he did before is forgiven, and he's a Christian man. And I'm just watching this with my jaw on the floor because this is the least Christian man that ever lived. This guy, you take the Ten Commandments, he violated every one of them. Every one of them.
Yep.
And bragged about it. And yet somehow these people, they don't know Trump. Peter mentioned earlier that he lived in New York, and I do still live here. And we all knew of Trump from the, you know, he was in the news constantly.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't national news, he became nationally well known. But in the early 80s, you know, he was a local figure in the news on the New York Post for all his antics. And the idea of this guy is a Christian man, not, I mean, forget it. And by the way, he was also a liberal Democrat.
I know.
Which always amazed. He gave money. He gave money to Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris, all of them he gave money to.
And I also remember, John, listening to white male talk radio, Bob Grant, Barry Farber, all those people were made fun of Trump all the time.
Right.
All the time. Okay.
Yeah. And then you know, he's a darling of talk radio.
It's one of the more amazing programs.
It's fallen apart. Thank God. That's over. All fallen apart.
Well, I certainly hope so because it's really
I just have one more quick comment. I know other people want to speak. Last night I saw an interview, a part of it that, CNN reporter did with Franklin Graham's niece, and she is horrified about Trump and talked about how, you know, it's caused a split in the Graham family. And I think that I hope and pray that some evangelicals will begin to see the light.
I think that's all
we can hope for.
By the way, let me just say, it's not on the topic exactly, but growing up, I heard these stories and from my grandmother. And I tell you, Billy Graham did more good for more people by preaching the gospel in a way that brought people in to the thing, not with this divisiveness that is going on now. And I mean, they just revered him, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the evangelicals. I went to a...
No, my grandmother was an evangelical.
I found them a bit off-putting, but that's me. That's my opinion. That's okay. But he did so much good, and it's just incredibly sad.
You know, he started Christianity Today, which is a magazine, and they opposed Trump because of his moral character. And so I think that's interesting. And then the fact that the evangelicals, you know, backed him, and it's shame. You know, I'm just, again, I'm horrified.
Well, I mean, if we go theological for a second, you believe in the existence of the devil. If you do. If you do. If you're the devil and you want to take down God and the power of good, there are two places you go. One was the Vatican and get into the church and rot it out through rotten priests going after little children and discrediting and ruining a lot of that church. And the other place you go is in the American church and in the White House. You go in there and you ruin it from within. And look what has happened. Look what has happened. And look at what's happened to America. And now I look at the Catholic Church and I say they realized the problem they had. And what did they do? They elected an American Pope to clean up not just the church, but to clean up America. And that's the counterforce. That guy against Trump is an epic battle. And guess who's going to win? The Pope is going to win. He's going to win that thing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Penny. Thank you. We appreciate your input.
Yeah.
Great call.
Any other hands raised?
We have Mitch.
Hello, Mitch from Southern Cal.
Yeah, good afternoon, good evening. Congressman, my first comment is that the three people that you've mentioned who've turned against Trump have turned against him for different reasons.
Yeah.
And Tucker Carlson is an avowed anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And that's the reason, because he doesn't believe that we should be backing Israel.
Right.
And, I totally disagree with him, being Jewish.
Yeah.
But my main comment is you and I don't disagree much, but we do here. I was very ambivalent about us getting into the conflict with Iran, but we're in it now. And the players on the Iran side are not the players who started this 8 weeks ago. The Ayatollah is gone. His son is impotent. And Iran is now being run by the Republican Guard, who are perfectly happy to see their countrymen and women all die, and they die with it. And what I'm reading and hearing is that the country, because of the economic, the blockade, is potentially within 6 to 8 weeks of collapse. Beyond that, that 900 pounds of nuclear material, enriched nuclear material, is still there somewhere. It may be buried under a half a mile of rubble, but it is still there. And now that we've gotten into this morass, I truly believe that we need to finish it. We need to make sure that the Republican Guard is not allowed to continue the way the Iranian regime is gone. And they, as I say, I think they're much worse than the Ayatollah because they're all military. And I also believe that allowing Iran to continue to hold on to that nuclear material will, if it isn't a serious problem in the next year or two or five, it will be in 15 or 20 if they're allowed to continue in office. So as much as I dislike Trump, and I dislike him at least as much as you do, we're in this mess, and we really have to finish what we started. And I'm not sure how that's going to finish, except to say that we really have to deal with making sure that nuclear material is out of there, and that the Republican Guard is taken out as well, because they will continue to be a threat for as long as that nuclear material is in that country, and as long as the Iranian the Republican Guard continues in their position of power. So
we're not really disagreeing on this either. I said that what is going to happen is they're going to make a deal, and he's going to release the $20 billion in frozen assets in return for a new nuclear deal with monitoring that will assure us that they cannot get up to a nuclear weapon with the material they have. And we don't know. 900 pounds. How does anybody really know what they have? Where it is? It's underground. Who knows? And as I've said on this show before, what would prevent these guys, you know, they make oil money and everything, from buying 5 nukes from North Korea? I mean, why not?
You know, they could, but where I disagree with you though, sir, is I don't think that the kind of deal you're talking about is adequate enough. It's because they'll.
The best you're going to get. The only way you're going to get what you want. And I've looked in a perfect world. We want it is to get rid of the Republican Guard, have that regime gone. There's only one way to do it. Ground forces have to go in there and fight them and beat them. And you're talking, they've got 90 million people there. The IRGC has 1 million men armed. 1 million. We're not going to do that. We're not going to.
I get it.
You know.
But I don't think the kind of deal you're talking about will be acceptable at this point. I think I think we have to make it so that their economy collapses entirely, and then perhaps something positive will come out of it. But I don't think the kind of deal you're talking about, you know, they'll sign the deal. Iran will sign the deal, but then they won't allow inspections. That's what happened the first time, and that's what'll happen this time.
By the way, that is not true. There were inspections. There were IAEA inspections all the way up to when Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the deal. And we would be better off with that deal ever since it was put in place. It wasn't perfect, but it was better than this, which is you got a rogue country making these nukes that we don't even know about. But anyway, that's...
Thank you very much. I always enjoy exchanging views with you.
And we are out of time, unfortunately. We are out of time for this week's edition of In Perspective. Congressman, as always, very informative discussion. We're learning a lot from you. We appreciate your thoughts about what's going on in the world and beyond. Sometimes we talk about that too, I suppose. But thanks again for being here, and we'll have you back soon, I'm sure.
I can't wait, Bob and Peter. Thank you. Penny was a great call. Mitch was a great call. The best show. Best hour we've had. It was fantastic.
Thank you to everybody else who was involved today. Diane, Mo, and everybody else who participated. I want to say hi to Rick Striano before we leave also. That's another supportive listener. He's from Florida. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, everyone. And we'll be back next week. Take care.
Thanks, Congressman.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is a public service announcement from the Massachusetts Association for the Blind. The Massachusetts Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired provides assistive technology training for persons with visual impairments. If you or a family member are interested in receiving one-on-one specialized training, please contact 617-991-7073 or email atcenter@mabcommunity.org.
Hello. A lot of people are familiar with various assistance programs that provide support for folks with disabilities, money troubles, or food insecurity. But did you know there's one organization which does good work on all three fronts? Welcome to the Department of Transitional Assistance. The DTA serves 1 in 7 residents of the Commonwealth with direct economic assistance like cash benefits and SNAP food assistance, as well as workforce training opportunities. Those served by the department include children, elders, and people with disabilities. And despite the misconceptions you might have heard, many of those who receive benefits from the government work regularly and are gainfully employed. The DTA mission is to assist and empower low-income individuals and families to meet their basic needs, to improve their quality of life, and achieve long-term economic self-sufficiency. The DTA assistance line is open from 8:15 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. That number is 877-382-2000. 2363. 877-382-2363.